Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 292nd episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton of K. Barton Tools, and I'm here with my co-host Diami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop and Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop. Today, we're visiting with a fantastic woodworker, furniture designer, and proprietor of Hardwood Tools, Leslie Webb. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming.
Should I say welcome back?
That's all right.
So we're going to talk a little bit about your new endeavor into owning and operating Hardwood Tools. But before we get to that, let's talk some things that piqued our interest around the internet. So first of all, for those future listeners, we're in the middle of the COVID-19, I don't know, house arrest, shelter in place, whatever you want to say. But one thing that's impressed me is just the sheer amount of woodworking online content that's out there. It has just basically exploded. There's no way I can keep up with anything anymore, it seems like. I don't know. Are y'all finding that to be true, too?
I'm impressed that you were even trying. But I will say that the fact that Grant Berger started up a YouTube channel must mean that everyone has too much time on their hands.
It's true. Yeah, I know. But there's some good stuff out there. But yeah, it's just been inundated with it. But there are some good things that have come out of it. One of them with, people that have time on their hands. And I'm not sure this is the case, but do any of y'all follow the Skinny Joiner on Instagram?
I can't say that I do.
Okay. I do. He's excellent.
Yes, he's excellent. He's primarily a chair maker. I think he's out of Singapore, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But anyway, he just created a new online, widget, woodworking tools, whatever you want to call it. It has some stuff for everybody. But what I thought was interesting is for chair makers, he has a resultant angle and sightline angle calculator. And there are some ways you've been able to do this. And I've done it too, manually using some special rulers. In fact, Pete Galbert came up with a unique little ruler to calculate all this stuff. But he's kind of put this into a little widget that automatically calculates everything for you. So it's pretty great.
How does it get the data?
These are things that you enter in. So you want to enter in, you got a chair leg and you want to say, okay, I want the rake to be this, which is, is the angle side on the side of the chair. And I want the splay to be this, which is the angle when you're looking at a chair from the front. And once you pick those two angles, it will tell you what your resultant angle would be when you're drilling for the hole. Along your sight line, and it tells you what the angle of the sight line would be from the center line of the chair. So,
I'm just a jerk who likes Whole Foods, but couldn't you
it's geometry.
It's geometry.
We're not reinventing anything.
No, but it's all just formulas, isn't it? This angle, you do some math to it, it comes out the other angle.
Right,
but not everybody knows sine, cosine, tangent stuff.
Yeah, and he was, nice enough to put it in a, I've done it before, and I just do it. You can do it mathematically, but I've used just Pete Galbert's little, he has a little, ruler that calculates all this stuff for you. So kind of like using, a slide ruler compared to a calculator. That makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So. But I thought this was pretty good for chair makers. So I would, the URL is a little interesting. If you're interested in it, I would go to the Skinny Joiner's Instagram account, look at his post where he posts about this. And then let me see, what else does he have on here? He also has an equilibrium moisture content where you enter in your temperature and relative humidity, which
That's
is
cool.
Which is pretty nice. And another thing that he has is a cotton tape calculator. So if you make, let's say, a poster rung chair or something like that, where you're going to weave a seat, you put in the seat length, the seat width, and the thickness, and the width of the tape, and it'll calculate how many inches of tape you need to make a seat.
Mm. Wow.
No, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. That's
a little more complicated, everything you explained there. Each one was a little harder to do with a pen and paper. Not bad.
Yeah. So there's some good stuff out there. But like I said, on Instagram, he's called The Skinny Joiner. So
what's he going to do when he hits, when he's 40?
I don't know, you know?
The Joiner, formerly known as Skinny.
Skinny.
Yeah, me. Why don't you turn the heat down?
I can't. The heat's turned off. I can't make it colder.
Okay.
Yeesh. Anyway.
So with that, so as Diami's sweating here in the 1st of April in his garage, let's talk about what's in the shop. So let's start with you, Diami. What's in the shop?
Well,
or what's cooking, should I say?
Shop is a toasty, probably somewhere between 87 and 88 degrees right now. And that is a result of having the two small heaters I keep in here. I have one, it's an oil-filled heater, but you plug it in. I'm sure everyone has seen them, even if they don't know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's like I think everyone has one, because every post I see of a shop in wintertime has that same heater.
Yeah, so it looks like a little radiator. So that's what I usually use through the winter, and this time of year, I'm not even sure I would normally have it on, but I have been working on the entertainment center again, so to make sure that my epoxy cures, because I have this, I'm using this slow set Total Boat epoxy, which I don't know what they say off the top of my head, but I know in practice it takes like 3 or 4 days to completely cure to the point where I can sand it and it doesn't get gummy. So I've got that, and I've got a little electric heater with a fan that I use really on spot things, like if I'm making paint dry or something. So I had the two of them going throughout the day today, and it's nice and toasty warm in here. But the reason for them is because I am working on the entertainment center again. So over the weekend, I spent the better part of, I guess, Friday night cleaning out the shop. And I got it to the point where I could actually see the entertainment center again.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, I sanded it back again. And then on Sunday, previously what I've always done is I've just coated the whole top with epoxy, figuring that it's going to fill in the voids and it kind of self-levels because it's such a slow setting thing and it should leave it flush. And that leaves a lot of sanding back to be done. And it still leaves these little voids and pockets and stuff. So the tact I took this time was I took a raking light, I mixed up some epoxy, and I just used a toothpick as my stirring stick, and I would look for little voids and divots in the surface, and I would just like take the toothpick and put a little dab of epoxy right in them. So there are all these little dabs all over the top that are all proud of the surface and need to be scraped back. And that's where it stands right now. What I'm using is, I just took out my actual card scraper as we've been talking here, and the epoxy is not hard enough yet to use the actual card scraper on. That little hook is catching on them and tearing it out, and I think I'm going to have to repatch a spot. But what I found works.
When did you apply this? I know you're saying it's slow, and that's what you're heating. Is this like 3 days old?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, my.
But this is the way it's been the whole time. Like I've found the best thing is to wait a week. I've been putting lots of thickener in it too, which I don't know if that chemically changes the reaction time.
It could. I wouldn't think it would extend it by days, though. Usually, I mean, even a slow, I mean, and I'm a West Systems guy. This is what I've had for years. But shut up. But it's like, oh, hardens in 6 hours, totally hardens in 24. And now, mind you, that's 70 degrees and 70% humidity. And we're not in that in winter in the north.
But anyway. Right now I'm 88 degrees and probably 30% humidity.
Yeah, I would think a day at that would be plenty.
I can tell you, having used this stuff, on this whole project, that's never been enough for it.
That's crazy.
But it is the slow. It's the slow hardener I have, and again, I could not tell you what the time frame of the slow hardener is compared to the fast. And I don't mean to speak bad of it because it seems to work great as long as you give it the time to dry. And right. I'd be talking hours instead of days if I was using the fast. I don't know. I've only ever bought the one.
Well, how long did it take you to do this?
To do what?
Put the little dabs of epoxy all over
the actual application, little dabs, was maybe 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
That's not bad. It's the standing back that takes hours and hours and hours, which is why I opted not to do it that way. And what I found is to sand the epoxy back, previously I was using a 4-inch by, like, I don't know, 22, 24-inch belt sander. I don't know what the dimension is, but it's the 4-inch one. It's a big, heavy Makita. It's a tank of a belt sander that I have. And I had to use 36 grit paper to get the epoxy off. And it's such a beast, and it wants to jump out of your hand and run down the board. It was very difficult to not have it dig in at times. To keep it moving the whole time was hard. So I don't want to put that back on it because right now the surface is relatively, it's coarse, but it's flat, and I don't want to make divots or damage it by letting the belt sander dig into it. So I sanded the epoxy off with my Rotex with a 40 grit pad in Rotex mode. And once you get the epoxy off, the timber strand is actually very soft.
Right.
And that left fishtails like you wouldn't believe throughout this whole surface. And I tried putting the same 40 grit paper. I switched the Rotex to random orbit. No change at all. I tried a 6-inch random orbit sander. Still couldn't get them out. So I have the Festool linear sander, which is this little...
I was about to ask that question. Yeah. You have all sanders Festool, so I wondered if you had the linear one. Yeah.
Of course I have the linear one. When I was doing the bullnoses, it was actually really handy because I have the concave tip. But on the flat one, I didn't have... I think I had a 45, 50, maybe 50 grit pad. I don't know what I had. But anyway, I used that, and that did an okay job of getting the fish tails out. But it's small, and it's not aggressive. By design, it's a very gentle sander. So it was well over an hour to work my way across this one top just to try to get all the fishtails out. And then that's when I went back and did the epoxy after that. But in doing the epoxy and looking at the raking light, I realized there's still some fishtails in it. So I picked up a rigid, I think it's a 3x18. It's a much smaller, much lighter weight belt sander. And I've still got the 36 grit belt for that now, but I'm thinking that the smaller, lighter machine is going to be a lot easier to handle and to move quickly across the top and not have a much less risk of it digging in and damaging something. Mm-hmm. So once I get the epoxy flush, which I'm going to do, I didn't even get to how I'm doing that, but I will in a minute. But once I get the epoxy flush, then I'm going to go through it with the belt sander and hopefully get a nice, smooth, flat surface with all my scratch marks going with the grain. And then from there, I'm hoping I can just use regular random orbit sanders and bring it to a much smoother surface. Because, I mean, for a 36 grit sanding, it's actually pretty smooth, but it's nowhere near ready for finish right now. So that's what's been going on with the sanding. And then to get the epoxy off, I'm blanking on the name of the book, but Matt Berger has a book about skateboards. Might be the homemade skateboard. I don't remember. Right. I apologize. I don't remember the name of the book. But it's a great book on making homemade skateboards. And one of the tips he suggests in there for when you're making a skateboard deck where the top or the bottom is multiple pieces of veneer joined together to make patterns and stuff, he just uses a regular straight razor blade as a little mini scraper to flush them up and to get the glue out. And what I have found is it works pretty well on getting the epoxy off. I lay it flat on the table or on the top of the entertainment center, and I can work it back and forth and cut the epoxy so that it's just proud of the top. And then I work it like a card scraper, and I can actually scrape it out pretty well flush. That works really well on the smaller ones. And the bigger ones, they're still a little too gummy, and they're tearing a little bit. So, again, I need to let it dry some more. But that's what I'm doing to get the little balls of epoxy off all over the place.
Hmm. Yeah, I've used a straight razor as a little mini scraper before, and it does work pretty well.
Mm. Yeah, it's just small. Yeah. That's really the issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're talking about your flat sander taking a long time.
Yes.
If you and you're only doing this to the spots that you
I did it to the entire surface. The entire surface was covered in fishtails. Pig cells, rather. Because, again, the entire surface was coated with a thin coating of epoxy, and I had to get that off with the Rotex. So the Rotex went over the entire surface.
Oh, man.
I've spent more hours sanding on this project than any other part of it. I'm sorry,
Leslie. No, it's okay. Do you normally have trouble with pigtails with your Festool sanders, or is it just this project?
I have trouble with them more often than I would like to admit, but usually where I have trouble with them is when I'm sanding something. I'm sanding a convex surface on something that's much smaller than them. So if I have like a rail, let's say maybe it's an inch by 2 inches or something like that, and I've got curves cut into it, I usually use an interface pad and the Festool sanders to sand the curves, and they tend to dig in a little bit. And I think that's because of the shape, and I'm getting really uneven pressure and things like that on them.
Have you tried turning down your suction?
I keep it at 50%.
Really, you should try it lower, because I've
I've
heard other people say that. I have a Festool sander. I've never had problems with pigtails, but I always turn my suction all the way low.
I've always had mine at 50%, and with like the regular random orbit sanders, they almost float over the top. I found it works very well. With the Rotex, it's just such a tank.
I don't have a Rotex, so I can't speak to it.
It's, I don't know if you're missing anything. It has a purpose, but they're really good aggressive sanders. Festool pretends that they're aggressive sanders that switch to random orbit, and I've never been able to use them in random orbit mode. Like, they're still too aggressive and grabby, and they're grinders is really what they are. Grinders that take a sanding pad, which is not a bad thing, but it's its own thing.
Right.
Does it wobble? Is that what the Rotex is? Is that it has a bit of a controlled wobble to it?
It's a gearing, so it's no longer random. And what it does is it spins, but it's not just rotary. It's kind of going in and out of this gearing, so it kind of, if you think about like waxing, where you're making little circles with your hand as you move your hand in a big circle, that's what the head does.
Okay.
But on some of the smaller, rounder stuff, I have to use, I don't have to, but I end up using it in Rotex, because the Rotex is geared, so it spins no matter what. With the random orbit, on every random orbit sander I own, Festool or not, you have to apply pressure the right way or it doesn't spin. You know, you pick it up off the workpiece, it doesn't spin. You put pressure on it the wrong way, it doesn't spin. So when I'm sanding these narrow curved pieces, I can't get the pad to spin unless I have it locked into Rotex, so it's mechanically turning as I go.
I've had to start sand some stuff with my Festool over a real short curved surface. In fact, I did it just the other day, and I can't get it to spin. It does sand, but then I've always had some issues with pigtails, but Leslie, I want to take your suggestion, because I've never turned my extractor all the way down.
I would try that, and then also make sure you don't have like a little piece of debris or something on the on the pad under the sandpaper. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then just fresh a sanding disc. But that's all I know to tell people to do.
If you're not sure if your sanding disc is fresh or not, it's time to replace it.
It's time to get a fresh one.
Yes.
Yeah.
it's just like when you're sharpening on like a whetstone, you got to be really careful that you're not carrying the larger debris onto the next finer as you go, or you could just scratch the shit out of it, you know, because you're thinking it's not as coarse, but you have just a little bit of coarse in there, and it'll pay dividends.
So do y'all use the Festool paper, or I use Abernat, but
my Festool sanders, I use the Festool paper.
I use the Festool paper.
Maybe that could be an issue too. I don't know. Well, I find I don't know.
The dust collection with the Abernet, I find, isn't as good. And I have so much of the Festool paper. I've tried the Abernet, but yeah. I mean buying all new paper, and I'm not about to do that.
I understand that. Yeah. Well, I'll try and see what we come. But anyway, so Sean, what are you working on?
Oh, way less than that.
I see you found the floor of your shop.
I did. I found the floor of my shop. It's been a long time. It's still not done, but a massive improvement to my shop happened over the weekend. I was able to tear a lot of it out and reorganize. And I still want to change how it's doing. But I kind of went to more vertical storage than not so vertical storage, which was spilling out into the center of the room. And the room is barely 10 by 12, so it's not much to speak of. But I got the shop. It's tidied up quite a bit. In fact, my wife came downstairs and went, wow, it hasn't looked like this in a long time. And I said, no, it hasn't. And it's not done yet. But I realize I hoard little scraps of wood. And when I say that, I mean, I've got dovetail tail cutoffs.
Oh, my gosh.
Just sitting on a shelf. I don't know why, but I had them. And so now they're in a milk crate, just waiting to go to the burn pile outside. We can just burn this. It's fine. It's fine. 2x10s that I ripped a section off of. I was holding that wood for some stupid reason. Those things are expendable and unusable otherwise. So I discovered a lot of firewood. I got a lot of crap that didn't mean to go down here. House insulation and other stuff that was tucked into a corner, which helped open up the space quite a bit. But other than that, a couple of my rockets got a couple paint jobs. So
that's good.
Taking advantage when I can of doing that. Yep. This whole working from home thing has a lot of free time built into it.
Does it?
I mean, to me, it does.
No, I'm more power to you. I'm still working 12-hour days.
Yeah, I'm dictating that I don't on purpose.
I don't want to go into a long work discussion. Let me just ask about the rockets because they're a little closer to woodworking. Am I right that you don't paint the rocket until it has successfully flown? So if you're painting a bunch, that means you have a bunch of successful flights?
It's not necessarily. My big one, I did. I flew that naked, as they say.
Okay.
To prove its flight worthiness. And it had a catastrophic failure, and it still survived. So I'm cool. Oh, it wasn't a motor failure. The parachute got twisted when it was about 400 feet.
So
in the
it was
air
an assembly error.
No. Well, okay.
Who packed the parachute?
So the mentor, and he looked at how I packed it and said, "Oh no, you that'll be too slow when it comes out. You want to do it this way." And I went, "This is a different. It's not a typical parachute. I'll say that." And that sounds dumb, but this one is helicopters on purpose. It has a swivel built into it, and it has a lot of lines, and it has only four panels, so it's really holy.
Gotcha.
It's got a whole bunch of open space, and he packed it as if it was a solid parachute, and that would have been fine. What happened when it discharged early, by the way, that was another failure. The booster tube, the bottom section, kept going even though it had discharged, so everything flew out in front of it, and it went right through the lines and almost tied a knot in the air. Wow. And so it suspended the actual ability for the parachute to open fully, which caused a problem anyway, but that survived, so now that has a paint job, yes. So, but the little stuff, I have a couple little models. I'm spending time to paint those. I may lose them. I don't care. It doesn't take that long. It takes more time to mask it because I'm doing not a crazy paint scheme, but a two-tone paint scheme. Mm-hmm. And it takes me longer to mask it than anything. And, you know, these things could be built in an hour and be done with them. So, yeah. But it's a nice enamel paint that, dries in 15 minutes.
Okay.
So you can just kind of throw it on, throw a second coat on. It covers really well.
Do you, if it dries in 15 minutes, how long do you have to wait to tape over it?
Like a day. It says a day. And so I'm giving it that. I'm looking at the one I did this afternoon. No, I mean, I can tell by tack. In about an hour, I'm not leaving fingerprints in it anymore.
Okay.
So it does, it dries pretty good. And there's a difference between a few hours and a day as far as there's a slight give to it to where, no, then it's an actual kind of hardened shell at the end of it. And it's not a heavy coat. It's just the first coat's like a dusting, and then you can do it like twice in an hour to get a second coat on there without any sanding in between. And usually that's a good enough coat.
So is this like rattle can stuff?
Oh, total rattle can. Total high, yeah. What is it? High performance enamel.
Okay.
It's Rust-Oleum brand.
Okay. Okay.
My son actually introduced me to it by suggestion from his teacher when they went to school. Seems so long ago. But he, because they did these fiberglass rockets, and apparently it's really good at bonding to fiberglass, which means it has no problem with anything that's cardboard or otherwise. So I do an enamel primer and then an enamel paint over it just to make it kind of all work together nicely.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
When do they launch?
Well, when you can. The all the competitions right now have been canceled for this year.
Well, yeah.
Right.
So they were working. I mean, let's see. He qualified up here. The areas are all different. For the high power stuff, the season around us, which I would guess anybody in the north would be, it's you can use you. People have agreements with farmers. And so okay. You have farmers' fields outside of harvest time. So it's after harvest and before planting. That's the open season. Unless you know a sod farm that is available or something like that. I've seen that across the country. There are different places that can do it a little more freely. But we have the winter months essentially to use. And then you've got weather to deal with. So my son launched his first one. It was, I think, early October. Maybe late September. I can't quite remember, but and they try to do monthly ones throughout, and it's like a club based thing. It'd be like a woodworking club getting together to do something that they needed clearance from the government to do. You know, so you do it so often, but otherwise right. Little stuff. I mean, we just went out to the schoolyard a couple weeks ago and threw up a couple rockets that the boys built, and just the little hobby stuff.
Do you ever build the little ones?
Yeah. I've got two little ones right now. And I've got two. I have one more that I haven't started yet. A Patriot. One tenth scale of a Patriot missile that I'm building.
In case the Iraqis start attacking Michigan, you'll protect them?
Nah, it's fine. It's fine. It's just fun. That's one that's like.
You never know about the Canadians. You know?
That's true, yeah. but Sean's not in between the Canadians and Michigan.
No.
What's south of you? Kentucky.
Kentucky's to the south. That's way to the south. I'd have to get through the rest of my state. I'm so close to Michigan. It's a long, long way away. The Patriot's a cool one. Then I just had this kind of harebrained idea that it would be cool to have like a little scale army of them. Not an army. So like I want to do like I've seen like a 1/16 scale, a 1/10 scale, a 1/6, a quarter scale, half scale. And so like they get bigger and bigger because the real ones were like 18 feet long and
so, 8 inches Sean, diameter. When that collection is complete, does that mean that you have an actual missile battery in your backyard?
I would say I'd have a battery. No, I was thinking like I could have the launching chamber that they came out of, but they'd all be different sizes.
That's what you need is you need to have get an actual vintage launching chamber and have your little 18 scale rocket come out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or just make one. I mean, the smallest one I found is not an inch in diameter and only like 14 inches long, but it looks like a little itty bitty Patriot. And so, like, I could do that, and if I could get four of those, and the box would be like a shoebox, they'd all fit in. That's all it would take. I don't need to do that. Sure. Anyway, Kyle, what's in your shop?
Well, back to woodworking.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking, you know, I think I talked on a past episode about looking at making some modifications to my bench for a little bit more comfortable carving instead of building a totally separate carving bench, which Diami's in favor of.
Oh, you should do that. So totally, totally do that.
But anyway, so I've looked at a couple of things, and one of the things, you know, in talking with Chris Williams is, you know, he uses a high vise as well as mechanics vise for doing a lot of things. So I've been thinking about, you know, outfitting a mechanics vise on my bench. Basically, you mount the mechanics vise to a 2x4 that fits into your leg vise or tail vise. And in my case, I'd like it to fit into my tail vise, which means I'm going to have to put my tail vise back on my bench. I used to have a jet quick release vise, and I used that as my tail vise. And I replaced that with that Veritas surface vise, which is nice, but it would not hold a mechanics vise. So I'm thinking about moving that Veritas vise to the other side of my bench.
Kyle, pretend that I am only a woodworker and don't do mechanical things. What's a mechanics vise?
It's one of those that looks like a metalworking vise. You would probably call, you know, it sets up high, and you know, it has a metal base that's usually clamped or screwed down to something.
I think I know what
you're talking about. And then it's got jaws. So the smaller ones of those are basically known as mechanics vices.
Well, do tell, what business does that have in a wood shop?
Well, there's all kinds of things you can do, especially in chair making. The way Chris Williams uses it is put wooden jaws on it, so you know, have the metal jaws, so it's a little bit more friendly. But by screwing or clamping boards to like an arm bow, you can mount it in that vise so that you can shape the arm. You can also put a I do this anyway, but you can secure a 2x4 underneath your seat blank, and you can mount that in a mechanics vise, and it gets a little bit up off the bench, so it's a little bit easier to work on, you know, increases that working height. Let me see. The other things that Chris even does, because he primarily uses hand plane to shape his spindles, and he'll actually put the end of the spindle against the wooden jaw on that mechanics vise and ensure you're at a perfect height, just to hand plane down the spindle as you make it round. And cigar shape, more or less. So there's a lot of things you can do with a mechanics vise. Of course, also, if you had any metal work to do, which we all end up having to do as woodworkers, and they're kind of handy to have around too. Hopefully that answers your question.
I think so. I'll admit to trying not to have metal stuff in my shop.
Yeah, I know. But boy, well, at least in me making the jigs, I have a lot of metal stuff around. Oh, I bet. a lot of use for it. So, and then the other thing I've been trying to do is, I think I've talked about this on the podcast, is I'm still trying to find a source for a metal reamer that's at 6-degree included angle. I'm still working on that. So far, a lot of no hits, a lot of misses on this, but we're still working on it.
Godspeed, you man.
I know. I got one more thing, one more avenue to go down before it's just like I'm going to have to come up with my own CAD drawing of the thing and send it to somebody to fabricate. But I haven't had any luck with anyone wanting to work with me so far. So we'll see.
I know a guy in Ohio who'll do your CAD drawing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Well, if I end up going that route, I'm definitely going to run it by him.
All right.
But now, Leslie, I'm assuming, and I could be way off base here, but I'm assuming that your shop is free of rockets and metalworking tools, and actually you're doing something out of wood.
It is. I'm actually just starting to build a bench, which was intended to be taken to shows, which have all been canceled. But it's I'm still going to go ahead because eventually there will be shows again. And it's going to have all three H&T Gordon vices on it. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Cool.
And I've never built a workbench, so it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Really? I have to resist the urge to make it a piece of furniture.
What style are you going for?
Pretty simple. It's going to have to come apart. The base, at least, will have to come apart. So it's just going to be, do you know, like the Hoffman and Hammer? They're almost like the bases are sort of like a trestle. Mm-hmm. Not quite, but sort of like very similar to that.
Very cool.
Yeah. And just a solid flat top. It's probably be around 7 feet long, and the top will probably be like 22 to 24 inches wide.
Oh, so full size bench. I figured it would be kind of a demo smaller bench, but
I considered doing that, but probably part of it. At shows, there could end up being more than just me doing demos, and or you could use part of it to put some inventory on if you don't need the whole thing. So I just went ahead and made it workable for real life. Okay. I don't know if I'll use it in real life, but it'll be a reference for people that come.
Yes, yes. Well, note to self, do not volunteer to set up Leslie's booth for her.
I know. I'm sure the first time that, or maybe not the first time, but probably like the third time I have to move that thing, I'll be like, why did I do this? Should have made it 5 feet long.
Leslie, you say this is the first time you've made a bench. Do you currently work on something that's ad hoc that just kind of came together over the years, or have you bought benches? What do you work on?
No, I bought a bench when I started. I bought a Hoffman and Hammer workbench. And I like it pretty well. There's a couple. It has a tool tray, which I don't like. It really just accumulates junk for me. But when I started, I was in such a hurry to start building furniture that I didn't want to take the time to make a bench.
No, I understand.
So I bought one. Yeah.
Well, I guess one of the reasons for building this bench, you said, is to install the HT Gordon Vices. Say that right? Yes.
H&T. Yep.
H&T. Okay. And so, why would you be outfitting this bench with H&T Gordon Vices?
Because that is one of the brands that I'm selling through Heartwood Tools. That was sort of the brand that launched this whole idea.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about Heartwood Tools. How did it come together? It seemed like, you know, I knew Leslie as a furniture builder and designer, and then all of a sudden it seemed like almost overnight. Hey, guess what?
Well, if you'd bought more of a chair, she wouldn't have to sell tools.
Well, if she bought mine, I wouldn't have to build jigs and sell them.
I guess probably two or three years ago, I got some H&T Gordon tools, and I guess I had been always aware of them because one of the main instructor during my program at CFC was from Australia. Mm-hmm. So I guess I was always sort of aware of them, and they have a good reputation. I don't know what took me. I wish I had bought them sooner, but because I like them so much. But so I got them and I was really impressed with their quality. And I could not believe that no one in the States carries them. There's no retailer that carried them here. And I would talk to other friends of mine who are furniture makers about them. And everyone seemed sort of, not everyone, but a lot of people seemed hesitant to order from overseas. Mm-hmm. I don't know why these days people still are, but they are. And I just was thinking about that one day and sort of a light bulb went off. And I was like, oh, maybe I could be a dealer for that. And I actually thought about it for a really long time, like over 6 months, because I was sort of like, do you really want to do this? And I finally decided, well, I'll just ask Terry Gordon if he would ever let me do it. Because the other thing I didn't know is I wasn't sure maybe if they weren't over here because he wasn't able to do wholesale, because that, you know, that could be too. And so I just emailed, I kind of emailed him out of the blue and pitched him my idea. And he wrote back and he was like, yes, I would love it. So that's sort of how it started. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
You don't ask, you don't get what you don't ask for.
Exactly.
That's right. The worst that could happen is he says no, and who cares?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I've been aware of their tools for a while, too. And, yeah, that's been one of the things is, you know, before I spend that kind of money, I'd like to really, you know, play with one and you know, because I've heard great things about it, especially in the chair making world. I think his that small round spoke shave he has is all the rage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he's also got that curved sole plane. That's I forgot exactly what that is called.
It's a radius plane. He calls it the radius plane. Yep.
Yeah, there it is, radius plane, and that looks fascinating. I really want to play around with one of those because that looks like it would be fantastic for chair making. But yeah, so it's really great that you're carrying these now. Now, how long has H&T been in business?
He started, I believe in the early 90s, he started making hand planes. His background is actually in furniture making. And he is, he was in, I believe it was the Australian Air Force, and he was stationed in, I want to say Malaysia, and they made a similar style hand planes, but as he says, they were not very well done. He would see like the local villagers using them, and he sort of was intrigued by them, but he thought, oh, I think I can make myself a better version of that. So he made it for, so he made himself one, and I guess, you know, he had friends that were furniture makers, and they saw it. And they people started asking him to make ones for them. And then I believe eventually he got a really big order. I want to say for like 50 hand planes.
Oh, wow.
And he had to decide, do I want to be a furniture maker or do I want to make hand planes? And he decided to make hand planes. And he's been doing that ever since.
Well, they're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. And I assume they're made out of some Australian super hard, dense wood.
They are.
They look like it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's people are usually surprised when they pick them up because they don't expect them to be as heavy as they are. They're made. His main timber that he uses is called Gidgee, which is I know it's a ridiculous name.
Sounds like a pretend wood.
It is to us anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure they think our names are ridiculous over there, but it's a very stable, dense, this kind of slow growing tree. So it's really, really good for hand tools.
Well, now, like I said, or what I want to ask you is about the use of these. Now, they're standard bench type planes, like they're smoothing and trying and joiner planes. Now, these are used, as my understanding, you can use these both pushing or pulling them.
That's right. You can. Okay. They have kind of two styles. He has one that has like a tapered, kind of like a horizontal handle that is removable. And those you can push or pull. And then he also has what he calls his A55 style that has the traditional knob and tote for people that can't get used to the other style. you can pull that your Western style plane anyway, right? Just depending on how you do it.
Yeah, they definitely have that. And Australia is way eastern of us, but it's an eastern look. Definitely the pole planes, but just their shapes are reminiscent of the Japanese style.
A55,
in addition to having I'll put it in really layman's terms because I use a sander, is handles. it has, I'm gonna mess up the name of the adjuster, but is that a Norris adjuster? It's an actual adjuster, not a hammer adjusted plane.
Right. It's a mechanical adjustment and not the wedge like that's on the other ones.
Hmm.
So if people.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And it's not. I found there's a little bit of a learning curve to learning to adjust a hand plane with a wedge, but it's pretty short. And mm-hmm. if people mess with it, like if you went out into your shop like every day for a week and just like five times set up the plane, like, you know, put the blade in, put the wedge, get it adjusted so it's taking a knife shaving, take it apart, do it again. If you did that, you it would be second nature. It doesn't take that much, but
you learn pretty quickly when to hit it on the toe, when to hit it on the heel,
exactly.
The corners, how you feel it. Yeah.
But I know a lot of people are intimidated by it because when you watch someone do it, it does look a little bit like voodoo. They're just like tap here, tap there, and then it's taking the shaving, and it's like, how did you do that? It's not hard though.
Well, that's really interesting because, even, you know, my Veritas and Lee Nielsen planes, I will use a little hammer just to adjust the blade right or left rather than the adjuster.
Don't let Lee Valley know that or Vic will come and take your hammer away.
It's just, I use the adjuster to get it close and then a little tap, tap. And good luck with him taking my hammer away.
I'd put my money on Vic, Kyle. I'm sorry.
Wow. No, you just don't realize how many backup hammers I have. So, another interesting thing that H&T Gordon has done is their vices. These vices are not only beautiful, but
amazing.
I mean, they're amazing. And especially that pattern maker's vise and the tail vise is just unique. It looks, not only does it look robust, but it also looks fairly easy to install too, compared to some tail vises I've seen.
Yeah, I think all of his vices are really easy to install compared to most of them. Because even the bench, the front vise and the pattern maker's vise, it's a plate that you attach onto either the underside or the top side of the bench. So you might have to route out a little bit or add a spacer to get the right height. But I mean, it's pretty dang simple compared to some other ones. But yes, the tail vise is quite simple to install and it's nice. It's low profile and it works really well. That's the really nice thing. It's not just that they look really great. They work really well.
Yeah, that is. They are something else. They are something else. So, Diami, I got a pattern maker's vise for you.
I see that. And I almost wish I didn't already own one.
You have the more traditional manufacturer.
I have an Asian-made traditional pattern maker's vise. And all things being equal, I have zero complaints about it. It works as advertised. It is a revelation to use. This thing looks awesome, and it's a weird aesthetic of both looking as though it's made in a classical style while also very futuristic. I think is it brass? What's the non-silver metal component of the vices? I see like the handle is made of.
It's brass. Yeah, it's the brass, and the majority of it is aluminum.
Okay. Just it's a really distinctive combination there, and it's an amazing looking tool.
Yeah. And I imagine with the aluminum, it's a little bit lighter weight, so it's easier to move around into positions rather than doing that with cast iron too.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's quite lightweight. All things considered.
Yeah. I mean, it's a heavy duty vise, but when you're doing those pattern makers, you're usually constantly moving it into positions.
In the photo, I see that the lever that's underneath the bench that allows it to pivot up.
Yep.
Is on the right. Is that adjustable when you set it, or is it always on the right?
It's always on the right. There's two levers because it spins 360 degrees.
Okay.
And it also tilts. So there's a lever on the left and a lever on the right.
Okay, you're right. And as I'm looking at this picture, I can see one of them, at least in the picture, is kind of oriented towards the camera. It's hard to see that it's a lever. That makes complete right. sense now. Okay, I'm with
you. Yep. And the what's really cool is the shaft on the pattern maker's vise is off center. So when you spin it in one position, it can be level with the bench. But as you spin it, it can come up above the bench top height, which is nice. So you could leave it vertical, but raise your workpiece up towards you more, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think he has some YouTube videos out there
that he does
that goes over a lot of this, both planes and vices and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. He has some really good information on YouTube.
Now, do y'all have these planes in stock, or how does that work?
We do for the most part. There's, okay. I think, maybe one or two that are special order that he makes in small batches. He's still, a lot of his stuff still requires quite a bit of bench work. So he's making things in batches. But for the most part, we have everything in stock. So I usually can ship stuff within, a day. And if there's any kind of delay, I email people very quickly and let them know what's going on.
Oh, that's fantastic turnaround.
Yeah, that is. That is. Now, what other manufacturers are you representing, selling, stocking?
So I have some of the Sterling Toolworks tools, some of the dovetail squares and his plane hammer and that type of stuff.
Yeah. And, yeah. I have one of his dovetail squares, and that's great.
Oh, and that's now, such a great tool.
Yeah. And now I see that he's making ones for the Sterrett little double square, which.
Yes,
I bought before that because he goes, these won't work with Sterrett. And I went, well, I have a Lee Valley one. He goes, we'll work with the Lee Valley one.
Yep.
But.
Yeah, I guess Sterrett makes their little 4-inch double square body just a little bit differently than everyone else. Yeah. And we have the 10-inch floor up dovetail saws, which are really, really nice. And very reasonably priced for.
Yeah, they are.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
For the work that goes into them. Yeah.
They're handmade, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just one guy in Michigan making.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he does, and he's making all the parts in house, which is really impressive. Mm. Even is making his own screws.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a wonderful price for a saw like that. Wow.
Yeah.
And marking gauge he has is pretty interesting too. It's kind of your wheel type marking gauge, but it's not the reference plate. I guess it's not a round circle. It's squared off and kind of a octagon type.
It's a hexagon, Kyle.
Hexagon. Yeah.
It's
a hexagon.
There are six sides. Yeah.
Can I count? No, I can't.
So it doesn't roll away.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And that's what's nice. I have one of the wheel type ones too, and that's the only problem I have is I can't set it down. I gotta set it into a dog hole or something,
Right. So and then I started carrying the Sigma Select 2 water stones for sharpening, and the I don't know if you say Atoma or Atoma, but they're the diamond plates for flattening your water stones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was looking at those, and so you can buy a plate or you can buy, I guess, a thin sheet. So what's the advantage of that?
Well, so the plates actually have the sheets on them.
Okay.
And so over time, you can actually wear out the sheets. It can happen on any diamond stone. I don't know. People are not always aware of that, but you can actually wear them out. So for the Atoma ones, you can remove that sheet and replace it, or What I like is on the back side of that plate, you can get a different grit sheet and put it and have like a duo diamond plate. Like I have the 400, which I use to normally flatten all my stones, but on the back side, I put 140 in case like I ever have a really badly damaged blade, you know, plane blade or something, if I drop it and really mess it up. And then the sheets also you could use if you didn't want to buy the plate for whatever reason. If you have like a granite block that, you know, was totally flat, or like you could use it on the surface of your joiner.
Now, could you use these with other makers' plates, I guess?
I guess you'd have to compare the sizes and see.
It looks like it's a. I did look at earlier at the size of the sheets, and I didn't measure mine. I had the DMT plates, which I got a few years ago, and I think almost a year after I got them, I think, however you say it, Adama, whatever.
I'm not sure either.
But however you say it, they just hit the scene, and I've heard great things about their diamonds. They're very comparable to the DMTs, and I think I've even heard that some people think they're better. So,
yeah, I think it's really good. And again, I think it's a really good value for the price point, because it's quite a bit cheaper than the DMT stuff. Mm.
How do they adhere to the plates that they're replaceable?
They come with a sticky adhesive already on the sheets. Oh,
okay.
So it's just sort of like peel and stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty simple.
I have a granite surfacing plate, and I also have, I think it's old windowsill that I found when I was cleaning my shop, but it's actually Italian marble.
Oh, wow.
About 3/4 inch thick and 5 or 6 inches wide, and one of them is as long, it's probably 3.5 feet long, but anyway, it says made in Italy on the back of it, so I'm assuming it's Italian, and it looks like marble. And it's heavy and cold, so I'm assuming it's a stone,
right?
I have no idea how flat it is truly, but gotta be close. The surfacing plate I have is like one of those, I got it from Lee Valley, it's a granite, like 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, I have one of those too.
Yeah, I bought the Woodcraft version not too long ago.
No, or you can use plate. Some people use plate glass. You can use plate glass. Yep.
Pretty much anything 1/4 inch is stiff enough and flat enough to 1/4 inch thick. I mean, like a thinner glass might bow bend.
Yeah. Yep.
As long as you put it on something that's pretty flat to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well
that's
I'm sure
the key. That's the key, right?
Yeah. Flat all the way down.
However flat your surface is what your blade is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm assuming you're going to be picking up more manufacturers in the future.
I think so. It's gone well. It took off a lot faster than I thought it would, which is good. I'm very happy about that. I've been looking around, and I have some things that I'll be coming out soon, adding the COVID-19 situation might delay some stuff a bit.
Right,
but,
I imagine.
I think we'll see where this all goes.
Well, good. So your experience has been great so far?
It has. You know, it's funny because I wasn't sure if I would enjoy selling stuff or not, just because actually with furniture it's the part that I like the least, to be honest. I love designing and making it, but the selling of it is not my favorite part. But actually what I've really enjoyed is emailing with people asking for advice, because as you all know, there's tons of people out there with opinions, but not everyone has a really great knowledge base. Not to be a total snob, but
there's false information out there on the internet.
Some people would have you use an 11-degree reamer.
I know. 11's not bad. 12's a little objectionable.
So I really enjoy, you know, emailing with people that ask me questions and helping them kind of figure out where to start, especially beginners. It can be really overwhelming to try to figure out which hand tools they need to start out with or not. So that's mm-hmm. been, I've really enjoyed that.
How have you gone about finding, I mean, the different products that you sell now between, you know, you're in Australia, you're in Michigan, Sterling, I can't keep track of where he is anymore. And then assuming Atoma is somewhere Eastern. No, he moved and then moved back, I think. I don't know.
Email mostly. I emailed Terry Gordon. That sort of gave me confidence to reach out to other people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So pretty much everyone I've emailed and sort of told them my background. And because definitely part of it is I want to offer really good customer service and be able to answer questions and help people. I'm really only interested in selling products that I know through my own experience to be really good and mm-hmm. hold up and worth the money. So I kind of use my own experience, and for some stuff I've done a lot of testing comparing it to other stuff that's out there just to kind of make sure that my opinion holds up. and that's sort of how I've gone about it.
No, it's really cool just to see a couple like HNT. If I'd never heard of them, Florip, I've definitely never heard of. Sterling, I've actually, you know, we've dealt with him in the past, but I mean, it's great to see a place like Heartwood bringing different tool makers to the marketplace.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping to do. Give a home to, and I mean a lot, like the bigger chains are not going to mess with these smaller makers. They're just not. So it's sort of nice to be able to represent kind of more boutique makers too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you see a day where you'll take on lines that offer similar products? At this point, if you're choosing products that you use, I'm assuming you're only using, you know, one type of diamond plate as an example.
Yeah, no, I would definitely take on stuff that technically competes with each other, but like DMT and Atoma, I think you could have both. I mean, in the end, once you have a good quality product, people still have their preferences. Like some people are going to prefer DMT, just, you know, it's manufactured in the US and that means a lot to people and that's what they're going to want. So yeah, I could see that maybe down the road. Mm-hmm. Doing that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, you mentioned you had to cancel a bunch of shows, obviously, but yeah. What are some of the shows, suppose they weren't canceled, what are some of the shows that you're attending? Are you going, you know, primarily standard around Texas or nationwide or what's your...
No, I'm looking at nationwide stuff. So The first one that I was going to do was the Texas Woodworking Festival, mm-hmm. which was supposed to be mid-April, but it has been rescheduled for September 26th. So everyone put that on their calendars. We'll be there. Hopefully this is all over by then. Oh my God. I don't even want to think about otherwise.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I was going to do the Lee Nielsen Open House.
Okay.
Where? And
one at Lee Nielsen.
Yep, at Lee Nielsen. So, and that obviously has been canceled as well. And I will be at, hopefully this is going to happen, but at Handworks mm-hmm. in September. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting because Terry Gordon is from H&T Gordon is coming over for that.
Oh, wow.
So he'll be there and I'll be there doing demos and chatting with people. I really hope that event happens.
That's in September?
It mm-hmm. is. Yep. I think it's September 4th and 5th, I believe.
Right. First weekend of September.
If everything we're going through now clears out by then, September, October is going to be an incredibly busy time. because everything that can be postponed is being postponed to that time. To go with what was already scheduled to be that time.
See, I was thinking that's that's the first weekend of school for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Then I've talked a little bit. Nothing was definite, but the Kansas City Woodworking Guild. Oh. I think they have quite a robust.
Oh yeah, guild. I think they got a fascinating guild with like all the machinery and stuff that they have. I've heard rave things about their guild.
I've talked.
Should I move to Kansas City? Type.
Yes, I know.
You should not.
So I've been talking about them with doing some kind of, you know, event. I think they have. I know they have an open house. I believe it was also scheduled for April, and I'm not sure if it's been rescheduled or not. But or maybe doing just going up for a weekend and doing demos or something like that. So, and I would love to do others. This is sort of a whole new world for me, and I'm not as up on all the woodworking shows. So I'm trying to find out information about different ones, but I do think it's good. I do think it's important because when you're asking people to, you know, pay a couple $100 for a hand plane, it's definitely people want to try it out before they do that.
It means a
you
lot.
Know, and mm-hmm. yeah, and I putting, and I get that. I'm the same way. I mean, you want to try it out before you invest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, my shoe size hasn't changed in years, and I still want to try on the shoe before I buy it.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Well, you go through shoes at an alarming rate, too.
I do.
Yeah, Leslie, if you don't know, Sean runs marathons like every other week.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
No, I don't.
It's every 2 weeks.
You run them more often than any of the rest of us.
There you go. I surpassed 600 miles this year.
Oh my gosh.
So there you go. Wow. I could have run to Texas. Maybe. No, but halfway to Texas by now.
600 miles in the last 12 months or since January 1st?
Since January 1st.
Oh my gosh. So how often do you get new shoes? It's totally
off topic. The last pair I got mid-January, and I replaced them 2 weeks ago. So they lasted about a month and a half, 2 months. This is an alarming rate. I've never run this much. But that was 400 miles worth.
Are you training for something?
Currently, kind of not. I'm working with a guy who's trying to get ready for the military. So the plan that he's running is to do well on a fitness test. But at the same time, I haven't run a marathon in 2 years. So that's kind of in the back of my mind that this would be really great conditioning for it. I've gotten a lot faster running that consistently. Just kind of happens naturally. Also lost a little bit of weight, which is always good.
Yeah, you're a huge person to begin with.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Does the running make you get taller?
No, it definitely does not make me taller. No, I can't help that. My kids are still teenagers, and one of them is taller than me, and one of them has got a bigger shoe than me. So he's only 13. He's destined to be taller than me as well. I'm not big on the height department.
I have a 15-year-old who outgrew my shoe size about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah. It's crazy how they get.
Tribulations of woodworking.
I blame it. By the time I was probably 15, I was drinking a pot of coffee a day.
And I think
I'm not kidding. So I might have actually stunted my growth, you know? Not that my parents are gigantic Amazonian people, but I probably easily could have been a little bit taller. That being said, my older brother's like 5'3". Like he's got nothing. So there's also
he was short drinking teams. Two pots of coffee a day.
No, he wasn't. But no, I really did. I don't know why. That was just a thing, you know.
Did your parents not say anything? I don't
know. No,
no.
I was the second of four kids that were 12 years between the first and last, and so there was a whole lot of chaos going on.
Right.
it was a no-brainer when I got into college to work at a coffee shop. That's for sure.
Wow.
That was like between classes. I just worked and I got to drink coffee for free then. And I still, to this day, I drink. Actually, my wife was yelling at me today because I had to make a second pot of coffee, you know, because we're always working from home. But I was like, I literally drink coffee every day, all day.
Well,
until about like 6-7 at night. And I still can go to sleep just fine. It's just a thing. It's warm liquid. It's better than water.
Huh.
I don't know.
Wow. Well,
I think we've all learned something about Sean.
There you go. I literally, today I got done. I ran for 45 minutes and I poured myself a cup of coffee. That's what I do.
Probably if you didn't drink the coffee, you wouldn't do all the running.
Maybe it just keeps, it energizes my runs. That might be it.
Anyway. Achilles Hill of Sean.
take my coffee away.
Yeah. Well, Leslie, so I assume you're still doing your furniture. I think you've come out with some new designs here recently.
I have. I've been terrible about posting stuff. I can only handle running one IG account.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you're coming up, how you're juggling the two Instagram accounts, and I assume you have other social media accounts you're having to juggle too.
I do have a Facebook account for the Heartwood Tools, but I'm not very good at juggling the IG accounts, honestly, or not yet have I mastered that. But yes, I have been working on some new stuff. It has been a little bit, hours have been a bit haphazard just because Heartwood Tools has been busier than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. But I am just finishing up a batch of circle mirrors, round mirrors, and I am going to start soon on a blanket test that I'm pretty excited about. I've been working on new designs for a solo show that, that it was going to be. Originally we had talked about, me and the gallery had talked about doing it this spring, but because of scheduling conflicts, this was before any of the coronavirus stuff happened, we decided to do it in the fall. So that was sort of very lucky because
yes,
that would have been pretty upsetting. But so, yeah, I've been working on some spec stuff to get ready for that show. And all.
Where is the gallery?
It's in Austin, Texas. It's called Northern Southern. And the show will be up for the month of October, hopefully, I haven't talked to him, so I don't know if this current stuff is going to shuffle everything around or not. But if not, it might get pushed back. But I'm pretty excited about doing that. And hopefully it's also nerve-wracking because it's just you in the building. It's just your stuff.
How many pieces do you need for a solo show?
Well, this gallery is not huge. I don't even know the square footage, to be honest. But for this show, I'll probably have like 9 to 12 pieces of varying sizes. Some will be wall hung and some will be chairs and got a bench coming up. I've got all kinds of stuff in the works there. So I'm pretty excited about it.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
So these will be all new designs at the show?
It'll be all new designs. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to have a rocking chair there just because that's sort of my signature piece. But if I have anything that's older, it'll be the rocking chair will probably be it. The rest, everything else will be new stuff.
You got to have the rocking chair there. My two cents.
I know. I know. It does seem, it is.
Now, yeah, does that mean you have to make a rocking chair?
I have one right now. The one I made out of riffs on ash. I guess in early February it came back from It was in the Making a Seat at the Table show that was at the Center for Art and Wood. So it came back, and I have it for now. We'll see. Usually what happens, I always intend, this always happens, I usually intend to make stuff for me, and I think, oh, I'm going to keep it, and I'll have something for a while, and then eventually someone comes along and says, I want that one. And I'm always like, should I sell them this one or should I build a new one? And I usually just go, oh, I'll sell them this one. I'll send them the one I have and I'll replace it for myself down the line. And of course you never do. So basically I have no furniture of my own is what that means.
Yes. Yeah, that's the old saying about the cobbler.
Yeah, exactly. Cobbler, yeah, have no shoes.
And I think it goes, you know, for anything out there, you know, even my little small endeavor in jig making. Yeah, the ones that I would use if I needed to do it are my original yucky looking prototypes, you know.
Exactly. Yep. I know. It's hard. It's hard to make. Yeah, it's hard to do this stuff for yourself, you know.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, I did in this last batch, I did make one and set of my my stretcher jigs, and I set those aside and said, those are for me. And so far, I haven't sold them, but we'll see.
Yeah. Those jigs are really impressive, Kyle.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
They are, to have figured all that out. I'm very impressed.
Well, good, good. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really reinvent the wheel. I just put some concepts together and said, yes, it'll work for this.
Right. Yeah. Well, now, I think that's what we're all doing, right, is building upon what's gone before.
Exactly. Now, my boring jig that I came up with, I pretty much thought that out myself. You know, I'll pat myself on the back for that one. But I don't think it all depends on what you're doing. But the stretcher jig is really intuitive. The boring jig is, too. But it takes a little while to get your head around on how many different things it can do. But anyway, this isn't my sales pitch. This is your sales pitch. So. Well.
You could be the new listing on Hardwood Tool. Come on now.
No, should want like inventory and stuff.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, if a guy can get a plane to the United States from Australia faster than you can make a jig in Texas, I got a problem.
Yeah. I'm slowly building up an inventory, but there for a while, it was rough. It was like, you know, as fast as I could make it, it was going out the door, but yeah.
Well, that's a good problem to have, though. That's much better than the opposite problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, we'll see how these future listeners, we'll see how this COVID-19 pans out, because I'm pretty sure orders on some of this stuff is going to start not being as rapid fire as it used to be.
Yeah,
which is a shame. Which once again, you know, hey, if you got a small maker or a small business like Hardwood Tools that you know, they really could use your support right now, so. You know, you need that new plane.
It's very true. And not just tools, but local restaurants and bookstores and all kinds of stuff. Everything. Anything. Even just to buy a gift certificate, right? It's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or my favorite barbecue place, you know. You got to make sure you support those people.
Yeah.
Right now. Well, anything else you want to mention? Anything coming up or that you haven't mentioned that you want to give a shout out to?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
All right. Well, then let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. I guess I'll start out because mine's boring. I'm drinking Texas spring water. It is the finest spring water, but still it's spring water. But anyway, so that's what I'm drinking tonight.
Good. Stay hydrated.
I'm trying to flatten the curve of alcoholism.
There it is.
These COVID times.
Just drink coffee.
Exactly. So, Sean, what are you drinking?
Not coffee right now. You know, I've been looking for this for a while because I heard about it, and for no other reason than I hadn't had it before, but Bell's, a well-known mm-hmm. Michigan brewery, they have their two-hearted ale, mm-hmm. and they brought out their light-hearted ale, mm. which is, it's whatever, 110 calories. I don't think about the calories in beer. It's where I probably get most of my calories.
I had a roommate in college who absolutely believed he could live off Guinness and butter for a week.
Guinness and butter.
Oh,
wow. They well, the old story together. Is like Guinness is like eating a loaf of bread or something, right? Like that's.
Yeah.
But Guinness really doesn't have that many calories. It's one of the lighter beers on the market.
That's, it is?
Believe it or not. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't think it's right around that same number. Like, I don't know.
I could anything search under, it. Yeah, 150 or so, I think is reasonable.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there. So, yeah, it's one of the lighter, like I said, one of the lighter brewers out there. So anyway.
Yeah, so Bell's Lighthearted is really a just slightly toned down version of their Two Hearted, which is a very good pale ale. Cool. Try it. And Diami, how about you?
Tonight I am enjoying Other Half. I believe we talked about Other Half on the show a couple months ago. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Patrick Brennan brought some back to Kyle from New York. Is that Other Half?
Yes, yes.
And
I really enjoyed those. Those were absolutely fantastic.
They have been fantastic. Other Half is a little microbrewery out of Brooklyn, I've discovered, because I knew they were from New York. I could not have told you where they were from when we talked last about them. But they're from Brooklyn. And as I live out in the boondocks in Suffolk County, Friday they officially made their push into distribution in Suffolk County. So I stocked up on Friday. And tonight I had the Other Half Triple Mylar Daydream Imperial Oat Cream IPA. And it was, what I'll say of all theirs is they're not for the lighthearted.
No.
This was 11.3%.
I was about to say, it's over 10%.
Yeah, the lightest one I picked up was 8.5%. actually, I'm having an issue finding things in the fridge right now that are single-digit alcohol content.
Jeez.
But this was excellent. It was hoppy. It was dank. It was a very good. It was a good IPA. And you go with an oatmeal cream IPA, I would expect it to be a little fluffier than this, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. A little creamier, almost milkshakey. And this was not that. This was really good, but it wasn't that. This was the dankest thing I've had out of New York, maybe ever. And I mean that in the best way. It was a very good dank IPA. It wasn't quite so good as it got warm, but that's true of any dank IPA. So I don't fault it for that. So definitely worth checking out. If you can get to Other Half, I was able to buy four different kinds on Friday, and this is the third kind that I've had, and they've all been excellent. So I would definitely recommend the brand.
Yes, yes. I think Patrick gave me four or five different types, and yeah, they were all excellent. One a bad one in the bunch. And they have crazy names, too.
Yeah. Are you suggesting nice that Triple Mylar Daydream is crazy?
A little bit. It's good to know that their distribution is out of Brooklyn and into Long Island.
Exactly. Well, we're the eastern county on Long Island.
Okay.
They had to go through Nassau to get to me.
Yeah, I wish they would, go a little further, or at least to Texas,
but, or at least to Ohio. I'm closer than you.
You just got to come to New York.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure.
You know,
really not right now.
No offense, but New York looks like a pretty scary place to be these days.
Yeah. Coming out of New York would be even worse. I mean, there's most people are 14-day quarantines coming out of New York.
I'm not seriously mm-hmm. suggesting that anyone should travel now, because we should all be home and not coming in contact with people. But what I will say is I would be much more concerned if there were this high an infection rate somewhere other than New York, because we're New York.
Well, and you have a zillion people.
It's not that we have a zillion people. It's that we have a New York attitude, which is what is required for dealing with this type of pandemic.
Mm-hmm. It's the same attitude I heard that the Italians had.
No, absolutely not. The Italian, no. I've been to Italy. It is not New York by any stretch of the imagination. It's a wonderful place, but I would never mistake the two places.
All right. No, I mean, not that way.
Okay, let's see who else we can offend. We've offended the Italians. Anybody else that's not from New York?
Checking all the boxes, man. That's how we do it.
You know, there's a high infection rate in Jersey.
Oh, to break this up, Guinness has 125 calories per 12
ounce. Yeah, it's not bad. There
you go. I had no idea. I would have never guessed that.
Yep.
Have another.
So, Leslie, what are you drinking?
Well, I, like you, have been very boring lately and have just been drinking water. I've been getting my groceries delivered from HEB, mm-hmm. and they stopped delivering alcohol I guess, tamp down on social interactions, is what they say.
Oh, wow.
So, no alcohol.
That is the difference between Texas and New York, because if you were in Brooklyn, other half would deliver to your house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, in my store that I was in,
I bet another reason HEB stopped delivering alcohol is just the sure weight content.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably true. And I think they are trying to concentrate on, you know, essentials. So, because it's been overrun, I'm sure across the nation that's true. But so. Yeah, I'm sure it's to also give their stalkers more time to concentrate on, like, bread and milk and such, you know?
Yeah. That looks to, at least in our area, starting to come back around from the spike in hoarding.
Oh, it hasn't changed
for lack of a better word. I mean, it's going to be different depending on the area, I'm sure, but... Yeah, I was just there tonight, and my wife, I was sent alone, you know, not trying to involve the family, keeping it as minimal as possible, but literally, like, getting buns and lunch meat and simple things. But there was plenty of that. The bread aisles weren't empty. The water wasn't empty. You know, there's things to be had. It's not that bad.
You keep running like you're doing, Sean, and you won't need to go get buns.
No, I don't actually eat that many. I had one tonight. That's probably the first one I've had in months. It's not normal. I'm getting lazy in my quarantine.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, we went to the store the other day, and it was like, you know, they had everything, but like some, hey, I want to get a large of this, and you couldn't get a large. You could get a small, you know, stuff like that. But yeah. I still equated it to like going out for Black Friday with a little bit of Russian roulette thrown in there.
Right.
At least that's the feeling I had.
Yeah. I describe it as if all holidays like Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, Memorial Day, 4th of July all happened one after the other within 1 week. That's what the grocery stores look like.
Yeah.
Just totally picked over.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. Let's end this on a nice upbeat note. So if folks want to get in touch with you about some of the tools you sell, where can folks find you on the interweb?
So the website is heartwoodtools.com, and on Instagram, it's at Heartwood Tools. And for furniture, it's lesliewebdesign.com or at lesliewebdesign on Instagram.
That's fantastic. You got all those with the same names. That's
oh my gosh. Naming the oh my gosh, Heartwood Tools. I don't even want to talk about what I had to go through to come up with a name for that. It was so hard. It was so difficult.
Do people hear it as hardwood instead of heartwood?
No one has told me that yet.
It's Heartwood, but I think Kyle, the first time Kyle even said it this evening, it sounded more like Hardwood than Heartwood. You got to kind of get...
That's my Texas draw.
Yeah.
It might be Texas.
Yeah. That's right. So, well, with that, Diami, where can folks find you?
I can be found behind the sander.
Yes. Yes, you can.
Or you could find me at penultimatewoodshop.com, at Diami Plotke on Twitter, or Penultimate Wood Shop on the Instagram, which what I understand is what all the kids are using these days.
That's right. So, Sean, how about yourself?
You can find me launching rockets. and otherwise, SeanW78 on most social medias. And Kyle, how about you?
Well, you can always find me on Instagram, a platform that matters, at BartKyle.
And that just about wraps up this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. Then you'll never miss any of our exciting episodes. While you're there, please leave us a review.
Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at MWA_national. What we tend to do there is I retweet a lot of what I find enjoyable woodworking content. You could follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast because we're not nearly as coordinated as Leslie and did not get the same handle across multiple social media platforms. We have a Facebook page that someone has control of. But really the most important thing is call a friend in Australia. See if they can hook you up with some pretend wood and then go buy one of these awesome planes from Heartwood Tools and make something beautiful out of pretend wood.